Okay, asthma. It's easy in practice to be tough on adults, isn't it? But when it's the babies, it's hard. It's hard. You know, you just want to... How many have had this feeling? You felt like saying, if I could take this child's pain, I would just take it because I can handle it. How many have been there? I'll just take it. I can deal with this, but you can't. And you can't because you're not supported well at home. Asthma. This part was really Carrie's work. Anybody know why Carrie Bone has such an interest in asthma? Because he was an asthmatic. Having been an asthmatic, what is he now? He's an asthmatic in remission. Now, Carrie doesn't like it when I tell him that. I said, no, you're still an asthmatic, but you have it under control. I'm still a carbaholic. I've just got it under control. It's an everyday thing. So it is increasing worldwide. A childhood infection is getting worse, and of course, one of the big contributing factors, excessive antibiotic use. An antibiotic for everything. It's just amazing. Exposure to certain pathogens in early childhood may cause suppression of immunoglobulin E against other allergens. So an early exposure. New studies I was just reading, I don't have the data, but now it is recommended, they're finding that the best thing you can do for your children before the age of 2 is what? Have bugs everywhere. Get them exposed to everything. Take them wherever the sick kids are. Get that immune system program. This is what we did with all of our boys. We always knew who we wanted to babysit because we would check the nursery at church on Sunday morning. I always wanted to know, who's not here? Okay, I know where you're spending the night. We did. Poor Christopher. Christopher, after you have enough kids, you can experiment. So by the time number 6 boy is out, Christopher, hey, let's try some of this stuff. It was risky, but we got a spare here, so let's try this with Chris. And so we'd have him spend the night. If anybody had any kind of sickness, we wanted him exposed. All right? And now he's mad at us most of the time. Because when the rest of the class is homesick, who's there? Chris. And so he asked, Daddy, don't I get like some sick days or something? Everybody else does. I said, well, we might arrange some time off for good physiology. The pathogenic process in asthma leads to epithelial desquamation, goblet cell hyperplasia, increased collagen deposition. The whole system gets gummed up, inflammatory cell infiltration, especially eosinophils now, trying to fight a battle, but they don't know what the battle is, and mast cells begin to degranulate. They begin to break down. These are all, each of them individually, indicators of a chronic inflammatory process. Problem is, we don't know what is causing it. So, inflammatory mediators, mast cells, macrophages, epithelial cells, all of the white cells, platelets, leading to bronchoconstriction, leakage, which gives me the exudate, which further plugs and can cause the crisis, and edema, ditto, mucus hypersecretion, gumming up everything, and the bronchioles are hyperresponsive now. So a minor trigger now becomes an attack inducer for this patient. And the one thing I know that I have no conception of is an asthmatic attack. I haven't the foggiest idea. What would be the closest way we could even begin to appreciate what that's like? Yeah, put a plastic bag over our head and seal it. I guess that would be it, right? Mm-hmm. And just see how well you feel pretty good about that. And so I realize I can't even sympathize because I have no idea what this is like. I don't even like having my head underwater much.
Take a lot of antioxidants.
Okay. Take a lot of antioxidants. That'll work.
Maybe have somebody about 400 pounds sitting on your chest and then try to breathe.
Having somebody sit on your chest and try to breathe, that's really their experience because they're struggling to inhale.
And they really do say for COPD and asthma to simulate it, to breathe only through a cocktail straw. Only that.
Okay, plug your nose and breathe only through a cocktail straw. Ow!
Yeah.
That makes my testicles hurt just thinking about it.
Don't breathe that deep.
Or that's not where the straw goes. Okay. Factors associated with asthma, not changeable, an atopic lung. What is that? Atopy.
Not growth.
No. I had to look it up myself. Atopic. An atopic condition is one that is inheritable, an inheritable allergic condition. So the atopic lung and not breastfed. High correlation with not breastfed, Similac punished babies. All righty. Possibly changeable. Allergens, air quality. And what that means, by the time we get them, we hopefully can intervene and get them breastfed and feed the mother. Possibly changeable, allergens, air quality. We can do a lot about that. Can be changed. Sinusitis, diet, poor digestion, infection, salt intake, poor immunity, stress, antioxidant status. So this is the stuff where we can begin to affect and make changes. Atopy and heredity, etiology of asthma, lung transplant. This is a fascinating study. Watch, from Lancet, 1993. The non-asthmatic recipients of asthmatic lungs developed asthma after transplantation. So the problem is in that lung tissue. However, the asthmatic recipients of normal lungs have not developed asthma up to 3 years after transplantation. What does that imply? Wherever the defect is, it's in the lung tissue. However it got there, it's in the tissue itself. Allergens produced by house dust mites, family Pyroglyphidiae. You see these things blown up, what do they look like?
They look horrible.
Monsters. Monsters. What? Are probably the single most important allergens associated with asthma worldwide. If exposure to these allergen dust mites in houses could be sufficiently reduced, then asthma symptoms may be markedly reduced and even prevented from being initiated. Clean up the house. Sinusitis, correlation 90%. Sinus disease, sinusitis precedes asthma more than 90%. Two-thirds are non-atopic. It's not inherited. It's triggered. More than half were aspirin sensitive. More than 90% had been given steroids. Well, that's all they really have to offer, given steroids. Treatment of sinusitis, surgery? Antibiotics results in substantial long-term clinical improvement. What is the surgery for sinusitis? Yeah, curettage, yeah. Just go in and scald everything. That feels good. Scrape it, yeah. Watch this. Back in the 30s, Hearst found low hydrochloric acid in 36% of asthmatic patients. Stop. Go back to what Dr. Lee talked about earlier under food allergies. What did he say was the leading cause? Undigested protein. Well, when was this study done? Hearst, I'll bet you Roy Lee was quite conversant with this study and may have been his source material. And so it may well be that the asthma case is not that, not initially. That they're a food allergy case, but not that. They're a low hydrochloric acid case, but not that. And it goes back to simply feeding these patients. Bray in 31 found the same in 80% of asthmatic patients. Adam, 60% with reduced HCL output. Gillespie, 52% low HCL, 20% low HCL. But these were all old studies. So what is the exposure of the modern physician to this old, and therefore useless information?
Not
at all. They never get it.
And it's even worse now.
Oh, it's much worse now. Anything old cannot be good, right? I mean, that's the attitude. Those are old studies. You have to have the modern literature. Do I? I still read Psalms and Proverbs in the morning. It's pretty old. It works for me. So how far does one want to carry this bit of nonsense? All right. Other factors. GERD, 1976, found 64% of adult patients with severe intrinsic asthma had hiatal hernia, and 46% had GERD. In a double-blind crossover placebo trial, by reducing reflux, they affected positively asthma symptoms. Why? Because they're aspirating. And when's that happening? Probably when they're sleeping. They're blowing this up, they're aspirating, that causes the inflammation, irritates the system, they're not aware of this happening. That is probably a vasovagal reflex. Esophageal irritation can directly affect the lungs. Now, we're not that conversant with this, herbalists are, so they will use the demulcent effect to undo that aberrant vasovagal reflex. So by doing something that coats, cools, and soothes the esophagus, I can stop the reflexogenic trigger. So things like slippery elm, okra pepsin even can do that. Variety of tools that can put the fire out here, and that can have a reflexive effect on the lung. That would be the herbalist approach. Infection, viral infection may be more important in developed asthma in children. 37% with viral infection subsequently develop asthma, retroviral probably in particular. Chlamydia has been linked to adult onset asthma, numerous factors involved. So then the tools to use. Let me cut through the chase. Boswellia as an anti-inflammatory. Remember, the thing that triggers this is inflammation. Lots of inflammatory triggers, and so I may need the anti-inflammatory Boswellia as my most effective frontline tool for that phase of what's going on. The Boswellia is not healing anything, but it can certainly help with the acute part. Boswellia, you can read the literature there, okay? Boswellia and asthma, double blind. They found that it worked, increased flow volume, just by reducing the inflammation. The advantage we do have, especially working cross-professionally with the Medi-Herb line, is an abundance of peer-reviewed literature. We don't have that on food concentrates because nobody's done that. It's too expensive and it's probably not going to happen, not very quickly. But at least if I'm working cross-professionally and I mentioned Boswellia, well, I can give them literature out the Yahoo to support that. And that's how we can engage. Turmeric. Turmeric we normally would think of as working on liver detox, and it does, but turmeric or curcumin, now of great note with prostate cancer in current literature, is also anti-inflammatory. Well, the turmeric is in Boswellia complex, and there's more data on that. This one's fun, ahatoda. Which movie was he in? Wasn't that in Star Wars? Ahatoda. The Medierb team had wanted to bring Ahatoda to the country, but they couldn't get it right. They had to get a better source. Now they've got it. Ahatoda appears to be the most effective bronchodilator and respiratory stimulant in a positive way. A variety of drugs, bromhexine, used much in Europe, was derived from this. So the pharmaceutical industry, of course, strips out the portion they want. Studies have shown it is anti-asthmatic, an expectorant, anti-allergic, anti-tussive, and a bronchodilator. That is now, as Dr. Lee would say, put up in Pulmico. And so this is what I use a lot of as an adjunct, frankly, with Allerplex for these cases. So Pulmico, 3 to 6 per day, gives me the Malabar nut tree, that's the Ahatoda, turmeric, skullcap, grindelia, ginkgo, and sweet fennel. Great combination. It seems to be working very well in conjunction with at least something like Allerplex. All right, let's put it all together. Albizia, we looked at, and that was used before Pulmico. That is what was most often recommended on the Medierb side for asthma. But now with Pulmico, then Albizia moves more to the allergies and Pulmico for asthma. Many studies on Albizia, blah, blah, blah. So here we are. And then a final interesting thing. Catalan, Drenamin, Numetrofen, Antranex, and Cataplex C. Those would be the core materials. Mark, what's the availability of the new formulation? Is now or when?
Now. That's a month ago.
It is? All right. I wonder how come they're not sending it to me. Yeah, they keep sending me ascorbic acid powder from Rick's office. Yeah. So Mark will ship globally. And I'm eager to see the increased therapeutic benefit from the new Cataplex C without changing dose, just maintaining the same dose. And we're eager to see, as I know Mark is waiting, what reports are we going to get? Are we going to see improved effectiveness? We think so. And I thought Kamu Kamu was a whale at SeaWorld. Never understood. All right. So now note 2, 3, and 4, Drenamin, Numetrofen, and Antranex, and then Cataplex AC are all in Allerplex. So once again, with a new patient, I often default to Allerplex. Why? Because they'll do it. It's just going to be easier. So Allerplex, 6, 9 per day, and Pulmico is quite often where I start with the asthmatic new patient. I'm going to be adjusting them. We're going to be looking at diet, 6 to 9, maybe 12 Allerplex. I don't like to go that high, but if they'll do it, that's fine. And then 3 to 6 Pulmico, change their diet, we begin. That works very well. All right. Boswellia, we've talked about. I may, if they're an acute case, I would add that. Now let's do something interesting. I knew about this guy for years. Many of you did. But I thought he was a nutcase. And maybe he is. But he's a good kind of nut. He might be a Royal Lee kind of nut. Stop asthma with water. Here we're, of course, talking about the work of Dr. Batman Waterboy. Yeah, Dr. Batman Gelage. His primary book, Your Body's Many Cries for Water. Now, you have to understand his story to get it. He was in one of those countries whose name changes because it's written in grease pencil. Was it Iran or Iraq, one of those. He was a political prisoner. He was an MD. So he's locked up because he actually voiced an opinion or something, or wanted burqa color changed or something. Nevertheless, he's in prison. They know that he's a doctor. So a guy comes up to him. Here he is in prison wondering if they're going to kill him or what's going to happen. Guy comes up to him with gut pain. So here's Dr. Batman Gelage. Like, what am I supposed to do, dude? So the guy's, oh, doctor, help me. And he probably just wants this guy to go away. He's not in a really good mood now. I'm in prison. And I suspect it was like this. What am I going to do for this guy? Gut pain. Help me, doctor. All they got is dirty well water. That's what they're drinking. So he gives him a cup of well water. Drink this. What do you think he had in mind? 110% placebo. Drink this. The guy drank it. He said, oh, that's, well, that helps a little, but it still hurts a little. Oh, drink more. I'm sure he just wanted him to go away. Well, the guy drank some more water, and he went away, and he came back, and he said, thank you, doctor, all better now. And he said, I'm sure you're right. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll go this way. But he had a referral. He was now building a referral-based practice. And this was cash only. So all of a sudden, they're coming up to Batman Gelage with all their complaints, and what's he got? Well water. So he started giving him water, probably just to make him go away. Here, drink some water. Drink lots. But he was making him drink more than they normally would. I'm sure he was just trying to shut him up. But he began to see results, and that changed the rest of his life. He said, oh, come on. This isn't all placebo. There are real organic changes here, and I'm giving him nasty well water. There's bug droppings in there. All right, it wasn't any special water. And that changed the rest of his career. He has become convinced that all of what we call disease is but a manifestation of the body's efforts to fight cell dehydration. Now think of the homotoxicology table. As I dehydrate, I cannot clean out, and I start moving left to right. All of these things come together in my head. So his formulation, he said, can cure asthma. The author said, I had the pleasure of spending an afternoon and evening with Dr. Batman Gelage, the author of Your Body's Many Cries for Water, The ABCs of Asthma, Allergies, and Lupus. My years in the scientific and health fields made me, oh, so skeptical of simplistic explanations, but I came away convinced of the soundness of Dr. B's message, that most of today's chronic illness is the result of the body's attempt to cope with chronic dehydration. He claims you can cure asthma. 20 years of research and many thousands of case histories of patients who fully recovered within hours or days attest to the validity of Dr. B's contention that patients are dehydrated rather than sick. The website you want to go to, www.watercure.com. www.watercure.com. Salt is the other half of the hydration equation. You can short-circuit an asthma attack, he says, by drinking 2 8-ounce glasses of water and placing a pinch of salt on the tongue. Salt vital for the generation of hydroelectric energy and transmission of nerve impulses in the cells. Salt acts as a natural antihistamine through salt-sensing nerves on the tongue. Histamine, he says, is the body's water-regulating hormone, neurotransmitter that manages water distribution and rations water during drought management. And that's why it's involved in shutting down the bronchioles in asthma, because you're dehydrated. Interesting insight. All right, so his formula. Drink 1/2 your body weight and in pounds as ounces of water. So I weigh 220. That would mean 110 ounces of water daily. I have never on any single day in my life consumed 110 ounces of anything. And if I did, I would do it at the urinal. All right. But that's what he says. Now, I thought he was a nutcase until I read his concern about making sure that you also get a 1/4 teaspoon of sea salt, Celtic sea salt, or Redmond's salt for every quart of water. So he was concerned about flushing out the electrolytes. And I realized, okay, he's not a nutcase. He knows what the deal is. Now, here's what happens. I haven't done this yet. Anybody doing this way exactly yet?
Yeah.
I have a patient.
She looked 20 years younger.
Younger? All right. Around the country, more and more docs are doing this just personally, which is where it starts, and they're reporting excellent results, and with patients who will do it. Here's what they report, those who've done it. I've not. I'm not even sure I want to, frankly, but probably should. They report that initially, it's difficult to consume that much water. Initially, you're peeing your brains out. And what that means is you're not absorbing the water. It is flushing through. What they all reported all around the country is over time you start urinating less with more water because you're absorbing and retaining and overcoming the dehydration. And it takes a while. As with iodine, perhaps it takes a while to get the body to saturate with water. I can't deny that. I don't drink anywhere near that. Most of you do not. Now, I also knew that he was sensible. This is on your CD, by the way, right? Mark, this one's on there. Yeah, it's there. So if you're taking notes, you have the article. You have the full thing. And he's got a full 12-hour DVD series, which I bought and can never watch, at watercure.com. I've got all of his stuff. I just can never see it. Yeah. Now, I also knew that I liked his sensibility when someone asked him, well, what kind of water? And you know what he recommended? Wet water. What did he have in prison? Toilet water. He said, there's no magic water. It's not. What you need to make this work is H2O molecules. That's it. That's the key. You've got to have H2O molecules. I do not buy the concept of magic water molecules that have been they've been flanaganated and they're special and the van der Waal bond angles have been changed now through some I just don't buy any of that. Sorry. Please don't send me literature on it. Don't want to see it. Got it. You need to drink water. And then he said, just drink water. You know what he recommends? Tap water. All right, I don't want to get sidetracked. He said, tap water. And we can talk about fluoride and all of that. Take enough iodine and the fluoride won't be a problem. Chlorine won't be a problem. It binds with the halogen receptors. Get enough iodine to blow it out. All right, that was yesterday's discussion.
The first thing they do when you go in the hospital is put an IV in. Absolutely, it's dehydration.
Yeah, they assume you're dehydrated. You're an American. IV. Ringer's lactate, I think, is the cure for everything. All right, and stat. I always knew the two important things were Ringer's lactate and stat. And I never could find a stat, but I knew that it was essential. So he didn't care about the type of water. And then when he was asked about coffee, coffee. Some of you will say, well, coffee is dehydrating. No, it isn't. That's not possible. But what he thinks might happen is when there are other things in the water, you may fail to absorb those water molecules. So it's not dehydrating. It's just not hydrated. So his sensible answer was, if you're going to have a cup of coffee, add one extra cup of water. Because if you thought that 110 ounces, the 8 ounces of coffee counts, he said, maybe it doesn't. Or maybe he's convinced it doesn't. Fine, just drink more water. So the bottom line is, with the patient, drink whatever you want, but have 110 ounces or whatever of water. I can't sit down and drink too many cups or glasses of water. Are you with me? I can do one, but trying to do another one, it's going to be coming out my nostrils. So in the office, here's what I do. We've got the magic holy water up front in the thing from Calistoga. It's probably toilet water in a plastic bottle. I don't know what it is. And we have the little 2 ounce paper cups. How many have the same thing in the office? It's similar. So what I do is about every third patient when I go up, I make myself drink one of those. I can do 2 ounces anytime. That's a mouthful. So I just make myself frequently go up and have 2 ounces. And so I'm getting a lot more by just making that a habit. So I'm sharing that with patients, and especially the asthmatic. I tell them, go to the website, get his book, read it, and give it a shot. No harm can be done. It certainly is worth doing. And I know that if he's right at all, then I must be severely dehydrated because I don't drink enough fluid. How many of you feel that's probably you too? Yeah, most of us in this room. So we need to sort of in mass try to do this without peeing all over everybody. All righty, Jane, do you have any last minute announcements?
No.